A Simple Thing, written by Iridan, read by Marianas. Chapter 26, Rameka. Din's whole body came alive as Boba came to stand in front of him. His skin prickled, his heartbeat picked up. He could feel the heat of Boba's body again. Boba came to stand in front of Din, thin inches in the fabric of Boba's pants, the only things between them. Din stayed where he was, on his knees. He'd agreed to Boba's first set of rules on his knees. He didn't see why this should be any different. "That's what I'm going to tell myself anyway," Din thought, trying to reassure himself. His pulse leapt in his throat. Boba studied Din contemplatively. His eyes were very dark. "You keep doing this," Boba said softly. His gaze flickered up and down. He didn't need to elaborate on what it was that Din kept doing. "Do you think it pleases me?" Din lifted his chin. "Doesn't it?" he asked. Boba had moved fast before, when Din had been on his knees. He'd moved fast in this room, wresting control from Din before Din could realize what was happening. He'd moved fast on the Huntress, too. Din had gone to his knees and Boba had hauled him back up. Here, though, now, Boba moved slowly. He was almost contemplative as he reached out with one hand, almost gentle as he ran two knuckles along Din's jaw from his chin to the corner of his ear. Din refused to flinch or look away. His heart was pounding, but... "But I've already said the hard part," Din reflected. He'd already told Boba that Din wanted this, that he liked it, that he needed it. This waiting, this inspection, while different desires flickered behind Boba's dark eyes, was easy enough to endure. Boba opened his hand and took Din by the back of the head. He was gentle enough about it. His thumb brushed the hinge of Din's jaw. "Doesn't it?" Din repeated. He held himself as straight and as still as he could. He knew that Boba could feel Din's pulse thundering underneath his thumb. Boba's grip tightened fractionally. Despite how determined Din was, he couldn't help but tense a little. This was a hand tangled in his hair, Boba's thumb digging into his jaw. Boba could tilt Din's head back without much effort, bare Din's throat. "Hurt me," Din thought, dizzy with the arousal that flooded through his chest. He tried to hide it, to mask it as just a sharply drawn-in breath as tension coiled through his shoulders. Boba's thumb dug in hard enough that Din couldn't help but cave to the pressure, his mouth forced open to try and relieve the pressure on the joint. "No," Boba growled, voice dropping like a blow. "Don't hide from me. I want to see you." The pressure on Din's jaw eased. Din closed his mouth and swallowed. "What do you want to see?" he rasped. He forced his shoulders to drop, his runaway pulse to come back under his control. "I want to see what this does to you," Boba said, his voice still a low, rumbling growl. Din couldn't help but turn towards it, heat burning through his chest, through his belly. Boba's voice dropped even lower, like a rumble Din could feel more than he could hear. "It would please me." That made Din's cock twitch in his pants. Another sharp breath caught in Din's throat. Instinct made Din want to curl his shoulders defensively, made him want to hide, to keep his open desire to himself. This is supposed to be private, Din thought. Want, desire, those were internal things. Din was supposed to keep them hidden behind his Beskar. "But Boba doesn't want me to." Din didn't have to follow the creed anymore. "But I agreed to listen to Boba," he thought. "At least, here. Like this." Din had promised Boba respect. Din's tongue was heavy in his mouth when Din swallowed a second time. Boba's hand had gentled again. He rubbed an encouraging circle against the side of Din's jaw. Nerves and shyness tugged at the bottom of Din's ribs, but he wanted to make Boba happy more. He made himself sit up straighter, resting his weight against his heels. He made himself untangle his hands from where they'd bunched in the fabric of his thin pants, laying his palms flat against his knees. He made himself tip his head back, pliant, and look Boba in the eyes. "That's it," said Boba softly. "Very good, Jerrica. I'll ask you again. Do you think this pleases me?" Din licked his lips. Boba's eyes were always dark, a rich, deep brown like Din's own, but now they were almost black, his pupils dilated. Boba's heart was beating quickly, too. Din could see his pulse fluttering in his throat. "Yes," Din said. His own voice had gone hoarse. "Yes, I think it does." "Why?" Boba asked. That threw Din a little. He floundered for a moment, confusion cutting through the growing haze of arousal. I don't know, Din admitted. Boba's thumb kept circling his jaw. "I like it," Boba said. "Because you haven't done this for anyone else, have you?" Din shook his head. Boba let him, keeping his grip loose. He ran his fingers through Din's hair. "No," Din said. "You've never trusted anyone else like this," Boba said. This time he didn't make it a question. He knew that it was true, and Din knew that Boba knew. "Yet you offer it to me without even thinking. That is..." Boba shook his head. "That's important to me," he said softly. He smiled a little, one corner of his mouth hooking upwards. "And it does please me. Maybe that makes me a pompous dikut, or a busha kikavid, but..." Boba shrugged. Din swallowed again, a little surprised by the frank admission, but settled by it some, too. Boba likes to be in control, Din thought. Boba told Din as much himself. Boba liked having that trust. He liked that Din would get on his knees for him, that Din wanted to get on his knees for Boba. "But," Boba continued, his hand now so gentle it was more an impression of a touch than a touch, was as light as the wind through Din's hair. "We have some things to talk about, Jerrica." Some of Din's arousal faded. Boba saw, because his mouth quirked into a true smile. The pressure of his thumb came back. "We don't have to talk," Din muttered, refusing to give in to the pressure this time. "We can just..." "Just what?" Boba asked, his eyes glittering. Din scowled. Boba's smile grew teeth. "Just what?" he repeated, teasing. "You got something else down there you want to do, Jerrica?" Din's eyes found the shape of Boba's cock. He couldn't help it. He'd been watching Boba's face ever since Boba stood up and made his way over to Din, but now that Boba had put the idea in his head, Din couldn't help but look. Boba's pants were made of the same loose, thin material as Din's. They were functional, not made for showing off, like the thin, gauzy pants Twilight dancers sometimes wore. Graceful clothes that billowed like they were moved by a hidden wind, that were somehow loose and clinging at the same time. But even though Boba's clothes were just that, clothes, meant to keep him warm at night in the desert chill and comfortable during the heat of the day, Din could still see the shape of him. Boba was half hard, the hunger in his eyes wasn't a lie. Boba wanted Din. Din had known that already, of course. He'd had Boba inside him just a few mornings ago. He'd felt the shape of Boba's cock before. "It's good to know that he still wants me, though," Din thought, tracing the shape of Boba's cock with his eyes. It was reassuring, proof that maybe Din hadn't ruined this after all, that he was broken from his creed, from his tribe, but maybe not broken from Boba. His fingers tightened on his knees. He wanted... "But he hasn't said that I can," Din thought. He looked up at Boba, who was watching him with open hunger. Din licked his lips, his mouth suddenly very dry. "Can I?" he asked quietly.
"Can you what?" Boba rumbled.
Din looked down at Boba's middle again. Boba was still fully clothed. Din was too, but that didn't matter. He knew that Boba could see him, read him, just as well as he might have been able to if Din was kneeling in front of him entirely naked.
"But I want to see Boba's skin."
Din wanted to touch him, to feel him.
"Can I touch you?" Din asked.
Boba was silent for a minute, studying Din. His hand was still threaded through Din's hair. He dug his thumb into the side of Din's jaw for a second, almost thoughtfully. And then he nodded.
"You can," he said.
Din flexed his fingers, contemplating the effort it would take to take his hands off his knees.
"Not much," he thought. His fingertips itched. "But if I start touching him..."
If Din started touching Boba, he wasn't sure that he'd be able to stop. Not unless Boba told him to stop. He wanted... Din took the choice out of his own hands by leaning forward a little, his eyes level with Boba's navel. He felt Boba's hand tighten in his hair, a sound of surprise above him, and pushed through the nervousness that twisted sharply in his belly. Din wasn't brave enough to put his mouth on Boba's cock. Not even like this, in the light of day, with Boba's clothes between them. He turned his head aside a little, leaning against Boba's inner thigh. He could feel Boba's cock against his cheekbone. It twitched when Boba huffed out a startled, fond laugh.
"You're... Garderetish," Boba said, still chuckling.
It was a warm sound that rolled through Din. It settled him some. Boba was willing to indulge Din in this, too.
"I can never tell what you're going to do, Jerrica."
"Is that a bad thing?" Din asked. His words were muffled by Boba's thigh. Pressed this close, Boba was all Din could feel, all he could smell. The usual scents of Sedru and Beskar were there, solid and familiar, and the light scent of some kind of fabric detergent. But they were cut through with a deeper musk, warm skin, faint sweat. Boba was fastidiously clean. All Mandalorians were out of hand, since bad smells were nearly impossible to get out of Beskar. But Din could still smell him like this. Not just armor and Sedru incense, not just tent resin and soap, but Boba. Din's own cock stirred, interested.
"Maybe not a bad thing," Boba conceded. "But unsettling. I can usually tell what people are thinking. I thought I could tell what you were thinking."
Din winced. Guilt prickled at him.
"I'm sorry," he said, muffled by Boba's thigh.
"It wasn't..." Boba sighed. The rich sound of his laughter had faded.
"Something you meant to do, Jerrica, I know."
"But I still did it," Din thought, chest sore. He'd still kept the truth from Boba. Boba had thought that he'd known Din, but he hadn't, and it wasn't because Boba hadn't tried to get to know Din.
"Like I said," Boba murmured, "I am angry."
Din winced again, even though Boba softened the words with an affectionate tug to the curls at the back of Din's neck.
"I'm probably gonna be angry for a while, but it's... I'm not angry with you."
"I'm angry with me," Din thought, but he didn't say it. He pressed his forehead into Boba's thigh. It felt nice, Din thought, to be held like this. To have Boba all around him, solid and warm, Boba's hand at his neck. It'd be easy to turn the warmth, the ease, into something else, Din thought. He wasn't used to doing this sort of thing out in the open, but it was easy enough to do. Easy enough to turn his face just a little, to skim his nose over the hardening ridge of Boba's cock instead of the crease of his thigh. "He's warm here, too," Din thought. He tightened his grip on his knees momentarily, fingers digging in, and then let go. "I can do this," he thought. He opened his mouth a little, the fabric of Boba's pants dragged across his lips. "I can..." Boba tightened his own grip and shook Din, very gently.
I think, Boba said, using his grip on the back of Din's neck to tug him away a little, that we probably should talk first, Din. He used Din's first name, which meant that he was serious.
Din scowled.
Manners, Boba reminded Din, mildly.
You don't have to scowl at me. You don't even really know what you're doing down there, do you?
Boba had asked Din something like that before, in the pool underneath Jabba's old tower. Or are you a master already, he'd asked.
Din reddened, embarrassed, even as desire flickered in his belly. After the last few days Din had, he was faintly surprised. Din had expected to be too tired for this, for the thrill in his chest when Boba's eyes darkened, for the way Din's heart kicked, unsteady and excited.
Din didn't know what he was doing, not really. He had the general idea of it, but the experience...
Din had never sucked a cock before. He'd never even really thought about it until he'd met Boba, until Boba had teased him about it, but...
It's not something that would be hard to learn, Din thought. He bit the inside of his cheek, surprised at how much he wanted to learn, and how much he wanted to try.
We really don't have to keep talking, Din said, flicking his eyes up to meet Boba's.
We can... I made a mistake. I wasn't honest. We can promise to be more honest with each other going forward, but...
Boba's hand and Din's hair had tightened to the point of pain. Relief stung the backs of Din's eyes.
I'm not going to argue about this, Boba said, voice hard. His eyes were gentle, though. The contrast made Din dizzy.
Rules, they're important. They protect you and me. You remember?
Reluctantly, Din nodded. He did remember. Boba had explained all of this to him before, when he'd first put Din on his knees. Boba watched him, then softened, apparently satisfied by Din's show of obedience.
I know that this is... that it's hard to talk about, Boba said. It's not comfortable, it's not instinctive. But it's important.
I know, Din muttered, looking away. A muscle twitched in his jaw.
Boba sighed.
Do you need something to help you focus? He asked.
That made Din look back up at him.
What? Din asked, confused.
Boba just shrugged.
You're out of your depth. Uncomfortable. That's understandable, I think. But I do know you, Jerrica. When you're uncomfortable, your first instinct is to punch whatever's upsetting you.
Din grimaced. Boba wasn't wrong.
Since I'm what's upsetting you, that means you'd be punching me, Boba continued, wryly. I don't want to get punched, Din. We've had a rough few days.
I don't want to punch you either, Din muttered.
Much, if Boba kept dragging this out.
So, said Boba steadily, let's start with a new rule. If you need something to help you, Jerrica, something to help you focus, or something to help you stop focusing, if you need pain or comfort or, I don't know, to beat the cark out of me with that spear of yours, I want you to ask. Understand?
Din stared at him for a second, then nodded again, slowly.
Arigate, Boba said, his voice dropping back to its deep rumble. Tell me, then. Do you need something to help you get through this?
Yes, Din said without hesitation. I do.
Boba smiled.
All right, then, he said, rewarding Din with another affectionate tug on his curls. Then I'm happy to help.
Din's eyes flickered back to the shape of Boba's cock through his pants, a little less defined now that Boba had taken a few minutes to talk instead of letting Din put his mouth on him. But Boba didn't loosen his grip enough for Din to press back in. Instead, Boba brought the first two fingers of his free hand up and set them against the outside of Din's bottom lip, just above his chin. Din twitched a little before he made himself settle. His eyebrows furrowed.
What? Din asked, not understanding.
Boba hmmed.
You asked for something to help you, Boba said. So, I'm helping. You don't want to talk? That's fine. I can give you something else to do with your mouth. Arousal kicked in the chest like a running fall there. His breath caught. This wasn't even that obscene, since Boba wouldn't let Din get close enough to get his mouth around Boba's cock, but it's all in Boba's control, Din thought, dazed. His tongue darted out to wet his lips. He could almost taste Boba's fingers. Come on, Boba coaxed, tone going sweet. Some of the gentleness in his eyes had bled away to hunger. His expression danced. Open your mouth for me, Shari. Let me in. He's doing this on purpose, Din managed to think. His entire field of vision had gone hazy around the edges. But it was impossible to disobey Boba like this when Din's entire body wanted to sway deeper into him, wanted to be closer, when his mind had come alive with curiosity, when he wanted, very badly, to know what would happen next. Slowly, cheeks burning faintly, Din did as he was told. He opened his mouth and let Boba in. It was strange. Din had kissed Boba now, had had Boba's tongue in his mouth, his teeth against Boba's teeth. But this was different. Boba's fingers were rough, the texture was strange. The taste of them was strange, too, though Boba pressed his fingers into Din's mouth slowly enough, giving Din time to get used to them. Boba didn't push in very far at all. He stopped with the pads of his fingers pressed against the first part of Din's tongue. His other hand was still tied in Din's hair. Din couldn't pull away if he wanted to. He didn't want to. What do you think, Jerrica? Boba asked, his voice rough. Want to argue more? Slowly, carefully, mindful of his teeth, Din shook his head. Boba moved with him. His fingers were warm and tasted faintly of shuka, of clay, of salt. He'd set them against Din's tongue, just past his teeth. Not deep enough that Din wanted to choke or pull away, but deep enough that Din's mouth began to water. Jate, said Boba softly. Or jate. Is this better? Someone making it so that you can't talk? Din nodded again. He could probably talk if he wanted to. He knew it. Boba knew it, too. Din could spit Boba's fingers out, could bite, could even pull away. He could say Gev and make Boba stop. But that's not what this is about, Din thought. Good, said Boba, still soft, even though he'd switched to basic from Mandoa. We'll try something new, then. Din couldn't help but shiver. Boba trying something new had gone well for Din in the past, but it usually meant that Din would end up hurting. It'd be a good hurt, though, a productive hurt. Something that Din could use instead of the grief inside of him that sat heavy in his chest like stone. I want it. I'm going to talk, Boba continued. His voice was still soft, but had shifted somehow, had deepened, roughened. Anticipation began to build low in Din's belly. And you're going to listen, okay? Din nodded again. Good, said Boba. If you've got a question, you can ask. Tap your knee twice. Tap three times to stop, understand? Din swallowed. It was strange doing that with something in his mouth. The motion pressed Boba's knuckles against the roof of Din's mouth. The texture was strange. The taste of salt intensified. Boba waited for Din to nod again, then said, very softly, Orjate. Then, without waiting for Din to adjust, Boba decided to explore. He pressed down on Din's tongue, provoking a splutter from Din, and ran a fingertip against the side of Din's teeth. My concern, said Boba, ignoring Din's spluttering, is that you don't take very good care of yourself, Jerrica. Din glared at him. Boba didn't notice. He didn't pull his fingers away either, didn't push deeper into Din's mouth or increase the pressure on Din's tongue. Din, half cautious and half curious, flicked his tongue up against the pads of Boba's fingers.
The taste didn't change, the warmth of them. But it was odd, Din thought, to be able to feel the ridges of Boba's fingerprints, the rough edges of his calluses. New. "You don't rest enough," Boba continued. "You ignore your injuries. You don't think before you rush into something either. Even something like this." Din briefly fantasized about biting Boba, but before the thought could fully form, Boba let go of Din's hair and brought his newly freed hand up, quick as an Exu pouncing, and caught Din by the face. "None of that," Boba said firmly, fingers digging into the hinges of Din's jaw. Din's thoughts stuttered a little at that. At the fact that Boba could wrap his hand around Din's face, at the sheer, improbable strength in his fingers. His mouth fell open a little, even without Boba putting too much pressure on his jaw. "Do you have a question?" Boba asked, tone dark. Din couldn't move his head too much, but Boba had left him enough slack to tilt his head from side to side in denial. "Then let me speak," Boba growled. "You were a grown man. Sever Dashnar Talanidi." "A blooded warrior," Boba added, catching the question in Din's eyes. He gentled some, loosening his grip so that Din could close his mouth around Boba's fingers again. When Boba was satisfied that Din wasn't going to twist out of his grip or argue, he let go of Din's chin and returned that hand to the back of Din's head, threading his fingers again through Din's hair. "A blooded warrior," Boba repeated. "What you do outside of this room is your business." "But," Boba said, "what happens here is my business. My responsibility. A bruise I give you in this room is a bruise I want you to care for." "Is this going to be a rule?" Din thought, glaring up at Boba. Boba smiled down at him. "I like the rules we set up the first time," Boba admitted. "The rules for honesty and respect and for trying new things. But I think we may need to add some things, Jerrica." "Just a few," Boba added, catching Din's mutinous expression. He pushed his fingers in just a little deeper, brushing the back of Din's tongue, and then Din was too busy trying not to choke to glare at Boba. That's why he did it, Din thought, once he'd managed to get his breathing under control again. He was starting to realize that Boba was a mere shab like that. "I think," said Boba, tone firm, "that we should renegotiate." Din's stomach dropped. "This doesn't mean we're done," Boba said gently. He patted the back of Din's head, the gentleness at odds with the way his fingers were pressing down on Din's tongue, heavy, a pantomime of what Din really wanted. "I don't think either of us wants to be done with each other. But I don't know." "I don't," Boba added. Din shifted in his grip, confused, frustrated. "I don't know what rules we might need to change or add," Boba continued. It's not an exact thing, Jerrica. It's different for everyone. But it does need doing before I give you pain again." Din made a face around Boba's fingers. He understood, he supposed. He did, but it was just... "I want it to be like it was before," Din thought. He didn't want to squirm and sit through more rules. What he and Boba had been doing before had worked. It had been good. But, Din thought, circumstances have changed. "So," Boba said, "as tempting as you are, Shari, we should take some time before we jump back into this." "A few weeks," Boba suggested. Din made an unhappy sound. Boba hmmed, quieting Din. "I am not," he said, "throwing you out for 2 weeks. If you want to come up here, if you want to share a bed just to sleep, Din, if you want to share a meal, we can do that. You can be here. I want you to be here. But anything else, we need to take our time." Din made another unhappy sound and licked the pads of Boba's fingers, hoping it'd buy him some mercy. Boba chuckled. "This is for you and me both," he said. "I need to think. About what rules will protect us both. About what we both need. And you need to do it too. You've got a better idea of what you like and what you don't now, don't you? Reluctantly, Din nodded. A better idea of what you need. You, Din thought, but of course he couldn't say that, even if he hadn't had Boba's fingers in his mouth. He nodded again, anyway. So we take, let's say, 2 weeks, said Boba. 2 weeks from today, and we think about what we want and what we need. Can you do that? Still reluctant, Din nodded again. Good, said Boba, voice warming. Very good. 2 weeks, then. And then Boba hesitated, which startled Din some. Boba didn't hesitate often. Something I want you to think about very carefully, Boba said, obviously choosing his words with more than his usual care, which was saying something. Is what you want this to be. This? Din's heart kicked in his chest. Do you want it to be more? Boba asked quietly. We agreed on a separation, on keeping this separate from everything else. But we are friends, Boba continued. This sort of thing, it can be done between friends. It doesn't just have to be an agreement between two allies. But since we are friends, if you didn't want to do this anymore, if it's too close for you. Din's eyes widened, panic clutched his chest for a moment, and his hands jerked, reaching for Boba. Whoa, Udesi, Boba murmured, shifting his grip. Udesi, I'm not... I've told you, he said. I'm not throwing you out, Din. I don't want that. I just... If... It's too much for you now that we are friends, he said. I want you to know that you don't have to do this. You don't have to give me this. If it's too much, too close, we can find another way to get you what you need. I need, Din tried to say, but he couldn't get the words out around Boba's fingers. Boba gentled him again, though his grip in Din's hair tightened a fraction. I said no arguing, Boba reprimanded, tone dangerously mild. I'm not trying to upset you, Jerrica, but it's something to think about. Boba pressed down on Din's tongue again, flooding Din's mouth with saliva, Din's chest with pained desire, before finally pulling his fingers away, giving Din his mouth back. Din swallowed heavily. 2 weeks? He asked, plaintive, when he'd gotten his voice back, his breath under control. Boba settled his fingers against the side of Din's jaw. They were wet and cool. The touch made Din twitch a little, but he didn't pull away. I know it's not what you want, Boba said. But I don't want to harm you. They were back at that again. At the difference between hurt and harm. Din swallowed again. His mouth still felt full and heavy. Because if we do it right, he said slowly, trying to show Boba that he had been listening. I want the hurt, but not the harm. The hurt and the harm are different, Boba said. He brought his free thumb up to touch Din's chin. The hurt is good. It's an agreement. Trust. You trust me to hurt you up to what you can bear, and I trust you to tell me when it's too much. The harm is what happens when neither of us know what we're doing, Din realized. When you don't know what you need to know about me, and I don't know it either. Oh, said Din, guilt sitting heavily in his belly. Oh, I didn't. No, said Boba, gentle. You didn't, and it's all right. That's why I want a few weeks. So you can get your head around what you need to get your head around, and I can do that too. Boba at last loosened his grip on the back of Din's head, petting the curls at the base of his neck again before letting Din go. Din swayed immediately, unsteady, and Boba let him. He didn't push Din away when Din swayed into him. Din was grateful for that, at least. That this, the comfort, the solidity of Boba, at least, didn't seem to need rules. Din pressed his face against Boba's hip. "Do we have to?" he mumbled. Boba's chuckle was a warm, living thing. Din felt it with his whole body. "Yes, we have to. But you don't have to start thinking about it all right now," Boba allowed. He tangled a hand in Din's hair again, except this time he didn't pull it or make Din look up at him. "Take some time. Think about it, yeah? I will, too. Then we can come back up here in a few weeks and figure it all out. And then..." Boba trailed off even as Din perked up. "And then?" Din asked. Boba chuckled again. "And then we'll see," he said. "We'll figure it out. Assuming Gorga doesn't kill us all." The mention of Gorga the Hutt made Din groan. "We've still got to deal with him," he muttered. "We do," Boba said. "Wanna start tonight, or do you need more rest?" "I need to figure out how you switch so easily between the two," Din thought, but didn't say. He needed to figure out how Boba could be Boba, Din's friend, one moment, and then Boba, Syndicate boss, the next. It was a handy trick. I can help tonight," Din said, pulling away from Boba with some effort. "I've slept enough." Boba offered a hand then and helped Din stand up. Din groaned, rolling his shoulders. "Armor up then," Boba said. "Fennekel wants us downstairs." Din nodded, a little thrown, but willing enough. It was... In their past arrangements, Din had always had at least a few hours to shift between the person he was in Boba's rooms, under Boba's hands, and the person he was in Beskar. There was no time now to navigate his way between the two. Din got dressed with the taste of Boba's fingers still strong in his mouth. He did up his kuta with the faint pain of Boba's hand still tingling in the back of his head. Boba helped Din strap on all of his armor, then Din turned and did the same for Boba. "That's why he wants me to think about it," Din thought, as Boba slid his helmet on and then offered Din's helmet to him. Din looked at it for a moment before tugging it on, too tired of feeling guilty to resent himself for his weakness. "I have kind of carked everything up." Boba hadn't known what he was doing either. Din had dragged them both into something new. "But that's not bad, is it?" Din wondered, strapping his weapons on next, his spear and his blasters and the darksaber and his borrowed jetpack. Boba didn't seem to think it was a bad thing, just different. Boba finished kitting up as well, then held his arm out, gesturing at the turbolift. "Well," he said, his voice smooth behind his helmet's vocoder. "Shall we?" Din and Boba went down into the throne room together. Din was careful to keep some space between them so they didn't walk in bumping their gauntlets together, their shoulders. But they still came in at the same time. Fennec, lounging in Boba's throne, saw them walk in together and rolled her eyes. "There you are," she drawled. She had a blaster in pieces on her lap. Another, this one fully assembled, was propped up beside one of her knees. "All right?" She looked at both of them as she asked, which settled Din a bit. She did say that what Boba and I got up to was none of her business, Din thought. Fennec hadn't... She hadn't wanted to know, really. She just wanted to make sure that Din understood what he'd gotten himself into. "I understand," Din thought, slowing down so Boba could reach Fennec first. "I understand, I do." "All right," Boba agreed. "Caught some shut-eye, anyway." "Good," Fennec said, fixing her attention on Boba. "Because we've got some damage control to do. I've put the word out to my people, they know what to look for, but..." Din peeled away, leaving Fennec and Boba to their business. He probably should stay and listen. Fennec was trying to root out spies, after all. But he didn't want to get between Boba and Fennec any more than he already had today. Neither of them stopped him as he padded across the throne room, either. Fennec had dismissed most of the guards. Din didn't see her hollow map of the palace, but he was sure she had it and knew where everyone was. Aside from Fennec, Din, and Boba, the throne room was empty. Not even Nora was behind the bar. Not much reason for a bar if we're not holding court, Din thought. He left the throne room and wandered down the hall, trying not to feel aimless. He couldn't go and check on the Verdike. Well, I probably could, Din thought. Strill had been... She'd been hostile at first, but she'd softened towards Din once she realized that he wasn't dangerous to the little tribe Paz had gathered around himself. She was mostly just confused. Din couldn't blame her. He was still confused, and he'd done nothing but talk about being Darmanda over the past 2 standard cycles. He'd talked about it and thought about it and raged about it in the privacy of his own head. All of that, he thought, tired and wry. And I still don't know what I am now. But he wasn't a threat to Strill or Paz or the Foundlings, and he thought that Strill had come to the same conclusion, too. Still, he thought, I shouldn't push. It wasn't his place to push. If Strill wanted Din's help, if she wanted to talk to him, she knew where he'd be. So Din kept himself from turning towards the empty wing of the palace and angled himself down towards the kitchens instead. Din could at least find something to eat while Boba and Fennec went over their business. He moved through the palace unhurriedly, taking the time to learn where the guards were, to figure out who was still staying in the palace. Boba's operation had grown. What had once just been a handful of guards had bloomed into a tidy operation. Fennec had some guards stationed at the ends of hallways or in front of doors, and she had others patrolling in pairs. She'd even gotten them all into some kind of uniform. Simple, functional desert clothing with bits and pieces of matte plastoid armor, chest plates stamped with a green mythosaur. It was disconcerting, seeing the mythosaur on other beings, beings who were obviously not Mandalorian. Din's fingers kept twitching every time he saw one. Mythosaurs are sacred. Mythosaurs marked the location of the forge in every covert. Mythosaur skull pendants were kept safe close to the skin, used to identify each other outside of the tribe. No one except the Alore were allowed to use them as their personal signets. But Boba is an Alor, Din thought. He'd learned a little more about the Fets while he and Boba had talked over their cooling breakfast. Boba hadn't gone so far as to call his clan a formal clan or house, not like Bo-Katan had named her own family, but Din had still been able to hear what Boba had talked around. The Fets, Jango Fett at least, had once commanded respect on Mandalore. They were an important clan. The Mythosaur could very well be their clan signet, and if it was, Boba was well within his rights to give his signet to anyone he wanted to, just like Din would have been allowed to pass the Mudhorn on to Grogu or any other foundlings he adopted. It's still weird, Din thought. Even A2, a droid, had a green Mythosaur painted on his chassis. Fennec probably wants to make it harder for an infiltrator to pass as one of us, Din thought. The palace guards hadn't always had a uniform, but now that they did, it would be another thing an infiltrator would need to mimic. Still, Din thought, I hope Paz doesn't come wandering out here. Din doubted that Paz would react well to seeing Arotise wearing a mythosaur, even if they'd been given the right by Boba. That's a Rath-Tarta wrangle another day, Din thought. Hopefully he'd never have to wrangle it. Hopefully, Paz would soon be strong enough to head out to Mos Pelgo, where he could be Cobb Vanth's problem. That's not fair, Din thought, guilt prickling at him again. He didn't want Paz to be Vanth's problem. He didn't want Paz to be anyone's problem. He wanted Paz to heal and be safe. That was all. Din pushed those thoughts aside, too. 2 weeks, he told himself. 2 weeks, and I can stop feeling guilty. He hoped, anyway. Boba hadn't promised Din anything. He'd just promised that he'd think about it. Din stepped into the kitchen, still half lost in thought, and found Ushib. She was bent over one of the kitchen's long, low benches, diligently kneading Jaipur meal into bread. She didn't look up when Din stopped in the doorway, but she knew that he was there. Din saw her shoulder shift, the angle of her mask changing a little. Din hesitated, unsure if he was welcome in or not. He'd done all his kitchen raiding during the time Ushib had been elsewhere, had been out in the sands with the rest of her people. "She can tell me how Paz is doing, though," Din thought. He dug his fingers into the doorway. "She can tell me if the foundlings are all right." Din doubted that even Strill, who'd decided that Din wasn't an enemy, would tell him how the kids were doing. Ushib made a rough, grumbling noise and left her kneading for long enough to beckon Din in. "Come," she said, signing with one hand while the other kept rolling dough together. "Earn your keep." That made Din smile. "Okay," he signed back and did what he was told. He'd kneaded Jaipur bread before. For weeks after his run-in with the Bladeback, Din hadn't been good for much of anything else, and even though they'd saved his life, the White Bantha had told Din that everyone in the desert worked. He'd been too weak to haul water up from the aquifers or to herd banthas, so Elhama, the Jita of the White Bantha, had put him to work around the cook fire. Those memories were hazy now. So much had happened since Din had been to Tatooine the first time. But he still remembered enough of his first lessons at Elhama's side to do this anyway. Jaipur bread was easy. The most basic versions of it were just ground Jaipur meal, a scoop of bantha yogurt and some yeast. Maybe a drizzle of honey or a pinch of sand salt if there was any at hand. Jaipur bread could certainly get elaborate, especially when the Tusken women started showing off to each other, but Ushib's recipe seemed pretty straightforward. Din watched her for a moment, getting her measurements in his head, then stripped off his gloves and handguards, washed his hands, and joined her at the bench. Once Din remembered how to do what he was doing, they fell into a comfortable rhythm. Meal, yogurt, yeast, knead. The dough formed underneath his hands. Din was slower at it than Ushib. She could roll out three, forming the dough, gathering it into a loose ball, setting it aside to rise, before Din could finish one. But that's all right, Din thought, a peculiar kind of quiet stealing over his mind. Work like this didn't need to be fast. There was only so much bread that would fit around a cook fire, after all. Din did manage to pick up speed as his hands remembered what to do, though. Ushib seemed content to work in silence, which Din appreciated. "I've done more talking in the last 5 days," he thought, shaping another ball of dough, "than I think I've ever done in my life." After all of that, it was nice to stand next to someone in a companionable quiet and just get something done. To do something that needed doing. Din hated feeling useless. This was necessary work. Any camp or covert needed food. Boba's palace was larger than any camp or covert Din had ever stayed in, but it needed food too. They all certainly went through rations like an army. Din had eaten better here than almost anywhere else he could remember. Ushib waited until they'd scraped the bowl of meal dry, dozens of lumps of dough set aside to rise, before she spoke. "Your brother," she said, tracing the words in the air, "will probably live." Din tensed a little, even as relief burst behind his eyes. "He'll live," he thought. "He'll live. He'll be okay." "That's good," Din said, his finger stuttering. Is the injury bad?" Ushib grumbled again in her throat. "Yes." Her sign was decisive and blunt. "It is bad. When his fever breaks and the wound begins to heal, he will always limp. But his fever should break." "He is going to live," Din thought. He closed his eyes briefly, glad Boba had set Din's helmet on his head, and managed a nod. "Good," said Din out loud. Sure, his fingers would shake worse than his voice. "That's good." Ushib made another rough Tusken sound. Din opened his eyes to see what she was saying. "The children will heal better than your brother will," she said, using the sign Tuskens used to describe their Masif puppies. Din smiled. "They weren't too badly hurt?" he asked. Ushib shook her head. Her mask and cowl had been impressive enough in the dark of the desert, But here, in the comfortable light of the palace, Din could see that she was one of the most elaborately decorated Tuscan women Din had ever seen. Her mask was studded with gemstones. The womp rat tusks on either side of her face were polished and gleaming. Even the rich dye of her cowl was deeper in this light, less faded than Din had first thought. She was rich once, Din thought. Not even Alhama had been so decorated. Din had seen what was left of the spotted Anuba. They had an oasis and a clever new leader, but if the spotted Anuba had once had the things that made a Tuscan band wealthy, sprawling bantha herds and dense copses of cedar trees, rich deposits of umar and bril, underground rivers that nurtured plants and animals out of the heat of the suns, they didn't anymore. If Ushib noticed in scrutiny, she didn't show it. "No," she said, shaking her head. "The smallest has an injury to her head that will need washing, but the other two will be fine. Children are tough. Your children are like our children." "They're not my kids," Din said, though he was nodding. He'd thought that before, that Tuscan children and Mandalorian children grew up in similar ways. For the kids that made it, the ones that survived, their upbringing made them strong, hardy. Stubborn, Din thought. And Tuscans, like Mandalorians, did everything that they could to make sure their kids survived to grow up stubborn. "What about the other two?" Din asked, switching back to Tuscan handspeak. "The warriors." The next Tuscan sound Ushib made was extremely rude. Din's smile widened. "Stubborn," Ushib said. "The young boar especially. But young men that age never have any sense." Din certainly hadn't when he'd been Jag's age. "Did they let you take a look at them?" Ushib nodded. "Once I had done what I could for your brother," she said. "I checked on them all again this morning. Your brother's fever has not worsened, though he still speaks to spirits and shadows." Din winced. "That bad?" he asked. "His fever is very bad," Ushib said with a small shrug. "Better than it was, but still bad. I am not surprised by his raving. At least he can still see and hear and speak. If he were unable to speak." But you think he'll live?" Din pressed. His voice had gone tight with concern. "If Paz was delirious..." Ushib nodded again. "Yes," she said. "He is..." And she did something with her hands that Din had never seen before. She took both hands and extended her first two fingers on each hand like she was shaping the letter Resh, then turned her wrists and brought both hands toward her chest. Din tilted his head. "What does that mean?" he asked, mirroring the sign. Ushib chuckled. "It means armored," she said, the peaks and valleys of spoken Tuscra filling the kitchens. She made the sign again. Din understood all at once. "It means Mandalorian," he said. Ushib inclined her head. "Or as close to Mandalorian as we can say," she said, repeating the sign again. "We do not have many words for other peoples." Din only knew the Tuscan sign for the Goyhra, the outsider. He hadn't thought that any tribe had bothered to differentiate between other species or races. "I came up with it when Boba lived among us," Ushib continued, answering the question Din hadn't asked. "He would not call himself Tuscra, no matter how much Akharan pushed him, but I had to call him something." "Akharan?" Din asked. The name was familiar. "Our old chieftain," Ushib explained, "before Ashek rose." Din's hands paused. He remembered the name now. Ashek had told Din that he'd fought and killed Akharan, wresting control of the spotted Anuba away from the old chief, who Ashek had called too old and backwards and set in his ways. "The desert is changing," Ashek had said. "I will see the spotted Anuba change with it." "Your chieftain let Boba live, even though Boba wouldn't, what, agree to be adopted by the tribe?" Din asked, switching back to basic because he didn't know all of the right signs. Ushib chuckled again. "Akharan wanted to kill him," she said. "But killing the one who slew the Devourer, no, not even Akharan would have done that thing." The Devourer, Din thought. The Sarlacc. "Ashek said, he said that Boba was your blood kin," Din said, reaching back into his memory for that conversation. He said that was why Spotted Anuba was considering an alliance with Boba in the first place. Ushib studied Din for a moment. Then she asked, hands moving carefully, "Do you have children, Mandalorian?" Din blinked, thrown a little by the change in topic. "I do," he said. He did know these signs. "One, I have a son." Ushib grumbled in the back of her throat. She was still watching Din. The jewels in her mask gleamed. "Once," Ushib said, "I had 4 children. 3 sons and a daughter." The 4 tusks sewn into her cowl beside her mask had told Din that. All 4 of Ushib's children had lived to adulthood. Tusken women didn't sew a womp rat tusk for a child who had died too young. But she just said that she'd had 4 children, Din thought, heart sinking. He'd known this, too. Boba had told him. That Ushib had once had children, had had a bloodmate. Their names were Aret, Ushib said, Ashen, Amadi, and Tahaza. She spelled the names out for Din, then showed him the name signs she'd given each child. An upraised club for Aret, a running Anuba for Ashen, Clever Bird for Amadi, and Dragon Pearl for Tahaza. "What happened?" Din asked slowly, watching Ushib's hands. Ushib made a rough noise. "What happens to all children?" she asked. "They grew up, and then they died, and then I was alone. Until the desert gave up Boba." Din froze. "He is not my son," Ushib added, making a chuckling sound behind her mask. "Not fully, not in blood. He would not take the rights." "No," Din thought to himself, remembering the way Fennec had talked about Boba and Jango Fett. "He wouldn't." Din had taken the blood rights a few months into his time with the White Bantha. The story singer, Aza, had assured Din that he could be both Mandalorian and Tuskra, and Din had... "I'd needed the tribe's protection," he thought. He'd been stranded on Tatooine, and back then Din hadn't known how to be alone, how to survive without the tribe there with him. The White Bantha had offered to adopt him, and he'd agreed. "He wouldn't," Ushib echoed. "But he is my son here." She touched the center of her chest. Not either of her hearts, but the space between them. The Tusken's larger heart, the Baidam, was on the left, like a human's, and the smaller heart, the Bairu, was on the right. "I shared my spirit," Ushib continued. "Akaran, he would not recognize Boba as my son or as tribe, not without the blood right. But then Ashek rose, and spirit rights counted enough for him. He was the one who named Boba as Tuskra, to thank Boba for his help. Boba kept Akaran's most loyal warriors at bay while Ashek fought him." Din's eyebrows went up. He hadn't known that. "Boba, he doesn't think he's Tuskra," Din said, head still tilted in confusion. Boba had called Din Tuskra before, but he'd referred to himself only as friend of the Spotted Anuba, not their kin. Ushib just shrugged. "He can call himself what he likes," she said. "Tuskra, Mandalorian, nothing and no one at all. But he is Tuskra because his spirit is Tuskra, as you are Mandalorian." Din winced. "I thought I was done having this conversation," he thought, a little wry. He couldn't be angry with Ushib. She had no way to know that Din was Darmanda. "I am not Mandalorian," Din said, copying the sign Ushib had taught him. I am an outcast." Even as he said it, Din could tell that Ushib didn't understand, not really. "An outcast?" she asked, her fingers moving slowly. "It's different for Mandalorians," Din tried to explain. Already he knew that he wouldn't be able to make Ushib understand, not really, not in the right way. A Tusken pushed out of his tribe was still a Tusken, even as he wandered the desert to die. There was no way to stop being a Tusken. Not even taking one's face coverings off in front of an outsider could strip a Tusken warrior of that name. It would take his tribe, his place in the raiding bands, even his Bantha, but not the fact that he was Tuskra. "We're not..." "They're not," Din corrected himself. tied up in blood rites like Tuskens are. The only thing that had made Din a Mandalorian had been the creed, his word. "But you are only an outcast," she asks. She definitely didn't understand. "A Mandalorian outcast." "No," said Din. "Not a Mandalorian outcast. Just an outcast. We call it Darmanda." "I don't understand," said Ushib. "You know," Din muttered, reaching up to push his helmet reassuringly against his forehead. "I don't really understand it either." The admission burned on his tongue. Blasphemy. If any Mandalorian heard Din say it. But it's true, Din thought. "I don't understand. Maybe I should have paid more attention when the elders taught us about this," Din thought, even though he knew that wasn't the problem. It wasn't that Din hadn't paid enough attention as a kid. It wasn't that he'd sworn to follow the creed without knowing what he was doing. It was just... "I don't understand how this helps protect the covert," Din thought. What did abandoning warriors who made a mistake or who made a choice to save a child or a friend or a lover, who'd lost their footing during a cantina fight and just gotten unlucky, what does that do for the covert, for the strength of the tribe? There were so few Mandalorians already. Boba had talked about the high days, the glory days, when there had been hundreds of thousands of Mandalorians all over the galaxy. Now, if Din had to guess, he'd say that there were probably less than 300 Mandalorians across the entire network of coverts. He didn't know how many of Bo-Katan's people were scattered across Rim space, but Din hadn't bumped into any of them over the years, so her kind of Mandalorians were probably thin on the ground, too. "There's maybe 1,000 Mandalorians left," Din thought. "Across all creeds and all ways. That was nothing. A remnant. Even smaller than a remnant. That was a fragment of what, according to Boba's stories, Mandalore had once been. How does throwing a trained warrior out over a small mistake help anyone?" Granted, Din hadn't made a small mistake. He knew what he'd done. But if he was just as Darmanda for his continuous and repeated infractions of the creed as Strill's lost Vod Talo, who'd just gotten unlucky in a fight... Din shoved his helmet back into the bridge of his nose hard enough that pain sparked and flickered. He didn't have much sensation there, and hadn't since he'd split his nose open slamming heads with paws all those years ago, but the little flicker of pain was still enough to ground him. "I don't understand either," Din said aloud. He shrugged. "But whether or not I understand it doesn't matter. It is what it is." Ushib eyed him. The gemstones in her mask flashed. "But you are still Tuskra," she'd said. It was not a question. Din got the impression that Ushib would whack him if he tried to say that he wasn't. "Yes," Din said, tracing the signs reassuringly. "I'm still Tuskra." Elhama had been very clear when Din had taken the blood rites. Once he'd finished, he'd be a Tusken for life. Even if he left the White Bantha, which he had, and gone back to wandering the galaxy, he could always count himself as one among the White Bantha. "Good," Ushib said. "I would hate to have to crack Oven's head open at the next gathering." That made Din's smile come back. "Oven still alive?" he asked. Oven had been the leader of the White Bantha when Din had lived with them. He'd been the one to share his blood with Din. Elhama had shared her spirit. Between them, Din had become Tuskra. Ushib snorted. "He is," she confirmed. "Or he was at the last gathering, and it's hard to imagine that anything in the desert would want to eat him, tough and stringy as he is." "If you see him, tell him I say hello," Din said. Ushib cocked her head. "Will you not stay and greet him yourself?" she asked. Din frowned. "What do you mean?" "The great chieftains are coming here," Ushib said. "After the rains, when it is safe to travel again. Ashek has been busy. He's told every tribe who'd hear him of the benefits of allying with Boba." Din stared at her. The great chieftains. Tuscans really didn't keep track of who they considered a great chieftain or not, but the White Bantha, with their sprawling home range and their enormous bantha herds, their many smaller branching tribes, definitely ranked. "Does Boba know?" Din asked. Ushib only shrugged. "I have not had the chance to tell him," she said, "but that doesn't mean he doesn't know." "Fennec," Din said, spelling her name out for Ushib, "is going to be beside herself. There's already too many we don't know here." Ushib just shrugged again. She was only a Jita, after all. The Tuscan chiefs tended to move around as they wanted. "The rainy season's some months off yet," she said. "There will be time to worry Fennec." And she taught Din Fennec's name sign, which turned out to be the same sign Tuscans used for the smaller chortling Anuba of the high mountains. Later. "Does Fennec know what you call her?" Din asked. Ushib chuckled low in her throat. "Probably not," she said. "She was not with us long." Din snorted. "I wouldn't tell her then," he said. He wasn't sure if Fennec would appreciate being compared to an Anuba or not. They were clever creatures, even the smaller ones, but Din got the impression that Fennec would be preferred to be called after something fiercer, like a crate dragon. Ushib waved his concerns away. "I saved Fennec's life," she said, and the broad motions of her hands were amused. "She will, I think, let me call her what I like." "So," she added, and Din couldn't help but tense up again a little. "You say you are not Mandalorian. What are you, then?" Din just shrugged, mirroring Ushib. "Boba's friend," he said. "And you're happy with that?" Ushib asked. Din startled. No one had asked Din that yet. No one had asked him if he was happy. Paz wouldn't, he thought. Paz thought that being Darmanda was a death sentence. The Verdike thought the same. Boba might have wanted to ask, but he'd probably forgotten all about it in the chaos of going to Arcanis, the chaos of coming back. "I am not unhappy," Din said carefully. I will have to think about that." "A fair answer," Ushib said. Din got the impression, just a faint feeling, that she was smiling at him underneath her mask. "Do you have other work?" Din shook his head. He was sure that Fennec or Boba would come and find him when they were ready. He spread his hands. "What else do you need done?" he asked. That turned out to be the right question. Ushib put him to work, and the work let the thorny tangle of the last few days sink to the back of Din's mind. Din spent the next hour or so helping Ushib prepare the evening meal for the rest of the palace. In the mornings, Ushib could afford to be discerning, to offer a broader menu, since everyone in the palace got up at different times. But almost everyone was awake for last meal, which meant that Ushib had to concentrate her efforts. She had Din chopping up roots and fruits and showed him how to butcher a side of bantha meat. Everything went into the large, hot curry pots in the middle of the kitchens. Din was pretty sure she tried to test his spice tolerance by having him chop up a handful of joloko, wrinkly little reddish-brown peppers that sometimes flavored Tuscan stews and curries. Din, who had grown up eating Kashyyyki poison peppers, didn't have a problem. The bright, stinging scent of the joloko even woke him up, clearing Din's head as sharply as a slap. That was how Boba found him sometime later, up to his elbows in Ojomian onions and polta bean sprouts, while Ushib added thinly trimmed slices of bantha meat to her curry pot. Boba, his helmet tucked under one arm, arched an eyebrow. "Putting him to work, Ushib?" Boba asked, one-handed. Ushib laughed. She did that often, Din had found. It was nice. It felt a little bit like being back in the covert with Tosho or Wirin, mending the gear or pulling a meal together to share with the rest of the tribe. "Everyone works in the desert," Ushib returned, a common refrain in the sands. "And I like this one, Boba. He does not complain like you do." That made Boba chuckle, too. "Fair enough," he said, switching to basic. "Jaren, wash up, will you? Fennec's got work." Din tilted his head, but obligingly set his borrowed crate bone knife aside. When he had pulled his verd knife out of his boot to start cutting into the onions, Ushib had smacked the back of his head. "Work," he said. He took care to thoroughly wash his hands. Din liked the taste of Jaloco peppers well enough, but the oils had a tendency to chew through skin if they weren't washed off properly. When he was finished, he tugged his gloves and handguards back on, then turned to look at Boba, expectant. Boba inclined his head. "What kind of work?" Din asked. Fennec hadn't ever given Din an assignment, not really. She managed the guards and the spies. She didn't run Boba's hunters. She'd brought him in to keep an eye on Geeta, but that had been the only time she'd asked for his help.
"She'll tell you upstairs," Boba said. He nodded at Ushib, expression fond.
Ushib waved them both off, returning to her curry pot.
"She didn't interrogate you too much, did she?" Boba asked once he and Din had cleared out of Ushib's earshot.
"No," Din assured him.
She was nice. As nice as a Tusken grandmother could be, anyway. She had killed two people less than a day ago. If anything, I interrogated her.
About your vote?
They're not my vote, Din said automatically, scowling. Boba shrugged. He opened his mouth, eyes dancing.
And if you call them my Darvode again, I'm leaving, Din said.
Boba held up a hand, chuckling at his own cleverness. As you say, he said. But still, what'd she think?
Ushib's pretty sure they're all going to live, Din told him. Even Paz. She said he's still in rough shape, but as long as his fever breaks, and she thinks that it will, he'll pull through.
She give you a timeline?
Din shook his head.
Boba grunted. You send word to Vanth yet? He know to expect 6 Mandalorians, only 3 of them likable.
Only 3? The kids aren't bad, Din protested.
Boba grinned. I know, he said. Those are the 3 I'm talking about.
Strill's not bad either, Din said.
Boba just shrugged.
Din sighed. No, he said. I haven't talked to Vanth yet.
Din shook his head again.
It kind of slipped my mind, he admitted.
Understandable, said Boba. Sounds like Ushib doesn't think moving Vizsla'd be a good idea anyway.
No, Din thought. If Paz was delirious, moving him would be a bad idea.
Will Strill talk to me, you think? Boba asked.
She should, Din said. You're not.
She doesn't want to talk to me because I broke the creed. You never swore the creed in the first place.
I'll swing by before dark, then, said Boba. Check on her and the kids. Vizsla, I still want to punch.
Wait until he's on his feet again, at least, Din muttered. He knew better than to try to get between Boba and Paz. They were both stubborn. He didn't doubt that the pair of them would come to blows soon enough.
Boba offered Din a lopsided smile.
For you, Boba agreed. Din resolutely tried not to feel warmed by that, by the little concession, but it kindled in his belly anyway. Affection uncurled in his ribs.
Stop, he thought at himself, reaching for a bounty hunter's cool distance. I'm working.
Boba brought Din back to the throne room, where nothing had changed except the spot Fennec was sitting. When Din had wandered down to find Ushib, Fennec had been sprawled in Boba's throne. Now she was sprawled in a chair at one of the corner tables, her holomap spread out in the air in front of her, flickering with its little heartbeat lights. Din eyed it as he and Boba approached. Sure enough, there was the red dot moving in the throne room that marked Din. Beside it was another red dot, the pace of the heartbeat more or less the same.
"She tag you too?" Din asked, looking at Boba.
Boba grimaced.
"She did," he said.
"You're both flight risks," Fennec piped up, not bothering to look up from her map. Din was a little affronted at that.
"I went out the window once," he said.
"Twice, actually," Boba muttered. Din resisted the urge to punch him.
"Boys," said Fennec, "settle."
"Jaren, Boba fill you in?"
Din glared at Boba, who looked unrepentant.
He'd look repentant if I punched him, Din thought, and shook his head.
"No," he said. Fennec finally looked up. Her expression settled into familiar lines of faint exasperation.
"We are making a visit to Mos Eisley," she said.
Din's eyebrows lifted.
"Now?"
"Now," she confirmed. Thoughts of punching Boba faded.
"Why?" Din asked, straightening.
"Did you find something? Is it Gorga?"
"No," said Fennec.
She deactivated her map and tucked the datapad away. She was dressed for the streets, plastoid in leather armor, her helmet beside her. She'd reassembled her blaster and tucked it into its holster at her hip. "We're just going to show our faces." Din froze. It shouldn't frighten him, the idea of taking off his helmet and walking through Mos Eisley. It was what Din should have done the moment he'd stepped off that chartered flight answering Boba's call. Fennec caught his tension and softened. "Not your face," she said. She jerked her chin at Boba. "Not even his. I want us all armored up. We're going to show Gorga that we're not scared." "Why would we be scared?" Din asked, recovering some. Embarrassment pulled at him. He tried to ignore it. "Gorga's attacked my people twice within a week," Boba rumbled. Din blinked. The attack he and Geeta had weathered on the road to Mos Eisley felt like it had happened months ago, but Boba was right, it had only happened a few days ago. "We haven't held court since you and Geeta were attacked," Fennec explained. "Nobody's seen Boba around except as a dot in the sky." "So we're going to, what, just walk around?" Din asked, confused. But Fennec nodded. "Gorga's got eyes in the city," she said. "Word's gonna get back to him if Boba's seen in the streets. He won't be able to say that he's got Boba running scared, that he's made Boba go into hiding." "Oh," Din thought. He nodded. He understood now. "It's a show of strength," he said. Boba inclined his head. "We still know Karkol about who's spilling secrets to Gorga," he said, "but at least this way I can act like I'm not bothered. And I can show Gorga that it'll take more than a few concussion grenades and a night raid or two to chase me out." "It's not just for Gorga, either," Fennec put in. "It's for everyone else, too." Din nodded again. A lot of beings on Tatooine had thrown in with Boba by now. It wasn't just the guards and the smugglers and the bounty hunters who'd flocked to the palace as Boba's power had grown. It was Mos Pelgo, who was counting on Boba's strength to protect them while they ran goods for him to Bestine. It was the spotted Anuba, who'd broken with tradition to stand with someone who didn't consider himself Tuskra. It was the people of Mos Eisley, who had settled back into a wary rhythm with Boba in the palace instead of Jabba the Hutt. "How many other outfits are watching Mos Eisley, do you think?" Din asked, catching on. Fennec and Boba traded a speaking glance. "Valerian's watching, at least," Boba said. "She might have agreed to keep to her side of the Great Dune Sea, but she won't tolerate another Hutt Empire, not here. If it starts to look like I can't stand up to Gorga, she'll stick her tusks in." "Black Sun's got eyes here, too," Fennec added. "And Zygeria. As best we can tell, Bib Fortuna was offering Zygeria a regular supply of slaves in exchange for credits and protection. Boba's obviously thrown a spanner in the works there, but they're sniffing around, looking for weakness." "Would they throw in with a Hutt?" Din asked, alarmed. Zygeria was one of the few rim space worlds that had thrived under the Empire. The Republic had, at least on flimsy, refused to freight with slavers. The Empire had had no such qualms. Fennec shrugged. It's hard to tell at this stage, she said, but it's probably prudent to make sure they don't think it worthwhile. If they think Gorga's fighting a losing war, they won't offer him any hands or blasters, Din thought. He nodded, decided. "When are we leaving?" "You ready now?" Din did a quick weapons check, then nodded. He'd kitted up when he'd left Boba's rooms. "Then we're leaving now," said Fennec. "It should be safe enough. The only people who know where we're going are in this room right now." "And none of us are selling information to Gorga the Hutt," Din translated. Fennec's easy faith in Din relieved him. He nodded. "Are we taking the sand road?" Fennec smiled. "No," she said, "we are not." She and Boba both pulled their helmets on, and then they brought Din through a door cleverly disguised into the wall of the throne room. The door opened up into a plain tunnel, which wound its way down and down underneath the palace, and, Fennec explained, out underneath the sand road itself. "Jabba liked to have a few ways out of the palace," Boba added. The lights down here weren't the warm, softly glowing light cells that had replaced the old bantha fat lanterns upstairs. The lights down here were dim and grimy, pre-Empire grade. The shadows in the tunnel flickered. "Old Hutt habit, I'm told. It's been handy a few times."
They followed the tunnel for what felt like a click or so, then climbed upwards, where the light grew brighter and brighter. They emerged behind a large, reddish rock. An X-34 landspeeder that had seen better days was waiting for them. Fennec pulled the ignition fob out of a pocket and flipped it to Din. "You want me to drive?" Din asked, dubious. "I do," said Fennec. She patted her pulse rifle. "I'm going to be watching the ridges." "I can drive, Shand," Boba said, sounding aggrieved. Din looked between them. This is an argument they've had before, he thought. "I can pilot," Din said. Fennec rewarded him with a grin. Boba just grumbled, but they all piled into the battered old speeder easily enough. It coughed and spluttered when Din triggered the ignition. "Where did you find this thing?" Din muttered, thumbing the ignition again. The speeder finally choked to life, its power cells flickering before it stabilized and gained some air. "Is everything on Tatooine a piece of junk?" "Hey," said Fennec, patting the side of the speeder fondly. "Watch your mouth, Jaren. This old thing's seen more action than you ever have." Din, eyeing the power readout gauge warily, believed her. Most of the speeder's gauges were cracked. Part of its casing had rusted through. It had had a windshield once. Din could see the anchorings for one, but it had vanished a long time ago, leaving a crooked stain. It had started its life out painted orange or red, but an indeterminate number of years out in the sands and the suns had rendered the whole thing a sad sort of beige color. The speeder gained air, though, its power cells coughing, and Din supposed that it didn't need to be the fastest thing in the sands. Din was only going over to Mos Eisley, not racing in the Boon to Eve. "I just hope we don't get ambushed," he thought. "We wouldn't be able to outrun an Eopi on this thing." The speeder held together, and they weren't attacked on the road. Fennec situated herself in the front beside Din, which left Boba to grumble and sprawl across the back. But if Fennec saw anyone out in the dunes or the ridges, she didn't see anyone she thought was a threat. Under Fennec's direction, Din pulled the speeder into a private bay on the outskirts of Mos Eisley's mostly respectable business district. Din hadn't spent much time here. Fennec evidently had, though, because she flipped a shiny golden peg out at the valet minding the bay, an Ithorian with triangular tattoos marching up her face, and got them waved right in. "Where exactly are we going, Shand?" Boba grunted, heaving himself out of the speeder. Din followed, hissing as the power cells cut out all at once and the speeder dropped gracelessly to the ground. "Taking the Grand Tour?" "Don't be ridiculous," said Fennec briskly. "We're following the Smuggler's Walk. Shouldn't take more than half an hour." "The Smuggler's Walk?" Din asked, curious. He'd never heard of anything like that. Boba sighed. "A holdover," he said, "from Jabba's days. It used to be when Jabba caught a smuggler skimming more than their fair share off the top of the shipment. Before Jabba got a hold of that Fairfax Rancor, he'd give the smuggler the chance to make it up to him. All the smuggler had to do was walk from one end of Mos Eisley to the other and back. A straight shot." Din frowned. "Why does that sound like a trap?" he said. Boba chuckled darkly. "'Cause in the bad old days," he said, "Jabba'd also pay anybody the smuggler's weight in spice if they killed the smuggler before the end of the walk." Din winced. "How often did a smuggler finish the smuggler's walk?" he asked. "Hardly ever." Din shook his head. "Then..." "Relax, Jaren," Fennec said. She had finished strapping a variety of ordnance to her person and looked up, tossing her braid over her shoulder before fitting her helmet onto her head. "It's not half as dangerous anymore. Boba's hardly going to pay out a spice bounty on himself now, is he?" "What about Gorga?" Din asked. Fennec and Boba just shrugged. "Would be kind of nice if he did make his move out here," Boba admitted. "I've fought in Mos Eisley before. It's doable. We'd come out all right, the three of us." "Gardikula," Din muttered. Boba snorted. "It'll be quick, boys," Fennec said. "And you're both in full basque. You'll be fine." "What about you?" Din pointed out. Fennec had only plastoid. Her armor'd hold up to a blaster at a distance, but anything else? Fennec just shrugged. Din sighed. "Fine," he said, even though all the hairs on the back of his neck had started to itch. "Let's get this over with." You got an internal comm in that bucket? Fennec asked, nodding at Din's helmet. Din blinked.
Short range, he said. The signal's not very strong. It's good over 15-20 feet.
Good enough, said Fennec. Switch over to frequency 10A. Passphrase is Bukesh.
Din nodded and did as he was told. He almost never used the internal comm relay in his helmet, but he knew that down in the covert, worries used them to talk to each other without being overheard. Din was very rarely around other Mandalorians for long enough to bother turning his comm on. He turned it on now, though, and heard Boba and Fennec do the same. He could hear their breathing in his ear.
All right, said Fennec.
Even though it was all Boba's outfit, Fennec was firmly in charge here.
Let's go, boys. It'll be over soon.
Despite the feeling of creeping dread nipping at his heels, Mos Eisley was quiet enough. Din could tell that he wasn't the only one on edge, despite Fennec's cool bluster. Her eyes never stayed in one place, skipping from house to house, rooftop to rooftop. Boba, to his credit, never showed any unease. They started in the business district, which was safe enough, and moved west like they were following the track of the suns. Boba moved through Mos Eisley with his head high, his shoulders back, an air of imperturbable strength wrapped around him like the scales of a crate dragon, like another layer of Beskar.
It's still too quiet, Din thought, shifting closer so that he was stepping in Boba's shadow, guarding his back. The unnatural stillness in the streets grated on Din's nerves.
Mos Eisley wasn't a huge city by any means. It wasn't Nar Shadda or Taris or Coronet City. But it was one of the largest settlements that Tatooine had to offer, and it was one of the oldest, too. It had always seethed with life. Even during the days of the Empire, the days of Jabba's reign, Mos Eisley had always teemed with smugglers moving on and off-world, with spacers swaggering from cantina to cantina, with mechanics and merchants and freedmen and slaves. Not even Jabba's death had slowed Mos Eisley down. When Din had come here the first time with Grogu, the city had been packed. Now, though, the streets were nearly empty. Not even Jawas had ventured out to sell their bits and pieces. The vendors who always sold Chuba stew and fried fala hadn't set up on their favorite corners. There were still sentients around. Business in Mos Eisley never really stopped, after all, and most of the cantinas were still open. But even those were muted, their patrons sticking to the shadows inside, their music turned down to a faint murmur instead of a rollicking roar.
I don't even see any advanced flies, Din thought.
The only flies in the street were the real Kyrick flies, buzzing lazily in the late-day heat, spiraling in slow circles around Mos Eisley's ever-present heaps of trash.
We're still being watched, though.
The weight of hundreds of eyes pressed down on Din's shoulders. His neck prickled. He gritted his teeth and pushed through it, trying not to twitch and draw down on shadows.
There's not much we can do for it, he thought, grumpy. He knew why Mos Eisley's people were so subdued.
Some of them had probably even seen the concussion grenades on the road as Din tried to get Geeta home the other night. Mos Eisley's residents were probably half-braced for an all-out war. If Boba felt the eyes of the city on him like Din did, he didn't show it. Din would have been impressed if he hadn't been so focused on scanning the rooftops and alleyways for snipers and other enemies. Boba wasn't much like Jabba the Hutt at all, but he had mastered Jabba's trick of looking confident and in control all of the time. The three of them followed Mos Eisley's main road through the city, moving unhurriedly so that everyone—cantina-goers, spacers, smugglers, mechanics, anyone and everyone who had made Mos Eisley their home or hideout or even their stopover for the night— could see that Boba was alive and strong and unbothered by Gorga's attempts to unseat him. That Gorga hadn't managed to chase Boba off or scare him into hiding. Din set his thumb against the smooth grip of his blaster.
I'd like to see Gorga try, he thought grimly.
Easy, Jaren, Fennec murmured, her voice soft in Din's ear. You're making the locals nervous.
They're making me nervous, Din muttered back. Comm static crackled in his ear.
With everyone sulking in cantinas and alleys, hiding behind doors and windows, Din couldn't track which faces he'd seen around the city or the palace before and who he hadn't. Din didn't know everyone in Mos Eisley, not by a long shot, but he did have a pretty good memory, and half the city had been in and out of the palace over the last few weeks.
Nobody's gonna assassinate me in an alley in Mos Eisley, Boba cut in, his voice a rumble.
Someone might try to assassinate you in an alley in Mos Eisley, Fennec disagreed. It's not a bad place to try and get a job done. I'd know.
Din's shoulders tightened.
Gorgo won't try anything here, Boba said. He sounded so sure of himself that Din wanted to believe him, but Din's instincts told him that Fennec was right, not Boba. Mos Eisley was full of blind alleys and shadowy doorways. Any of them would be a perfect place to snatch up a mark and take care of them, quickly, quietly.
Gorgo'll want to put on a show, Boba continued. Having me shot in an alley away from prying eyes, that's not his style.
What if we're past concerns of style, Fennec said. He's getting more and more desperate, Boba.
Boba just shrugged.
I know, he said. That's why I've got the two of you here with me, isn't it?
Din and Fennec exchanged a glance. Despite the fact that they both had armor on, Din knew exactly what Fennec's expression looked like.
Boba chuckled, voice low in Din's ear.
Udesi, he said. Gorga's not going to try anything here, not today. We'd have heard about it if he was going to make a big move. We'll be done soon. Nothing's going to happen.
Now that you've said it, Fennec muttered, echoing Din's thoughts. But Boba's prediction held as they worked their way through Mos Eisley's quiet streets, swapping the more or less orderly business district for the grit and grime of the Gleaning, and then the Gleaning for the Quarter. The residents of the Gleaning weren't quite as nervous as the residents of Mos Eisley's business district. Their cantinas were full, the music loud and throbbing, and the streets of the Gleaning were thick enough with vendors and pedestrians, with speeders zipping by and beings moving throughout the small crowds. The Quarter was quiet. But the Quarter had always been the quietest part of Mos Eisley. No one who lived here had ever wanted to attract attention. They were watching as Boba made his way through the city, flanked by Din and Fennec, but none of the Quarter's residents wanted to be in the streets. Once they crossed into more populated terrain, Boba slowed his pace and took his time, letting himself be seen, letting Mos Eisley's people come up to him and ask him questions, letting them call out to him in greeting. It was what Fennec and Boba had been trying to accomplish with all of this, but every time someone came close to Boba, Din had to resist the urge to get between them. Most beings took one look at Boba, at the shadow Din made behind him, and took a hasty step back. The few who weren't afraid of Din took a second look at Fennec and decided to keep their distance, too.
"It's fine," Din told himself, scanning the faces all around. "It's going to be fine."
Din didn't drop his guard until they'd finished walking one way and had turned around to make it back to the private bay without getting shot. The Ithorian let them in after Fennec tossed her another peg at, and Din took the landspeeder's yoke again, bringing them home as evening fell and Fennec watched the dunes.
Maybe this hunk of junk isn't too bad, Din thought, skimming over the sand road.
The speeder was big enough that they could all ride together anyway, but small enough that he could keep one eye on the road and the other on the ridges. Nobody lobbed concussion grenades at Din this time, and they made it back to the palace without any trouble. They didn't go back in using the tunnels. Fennec directed Din to the front of the palace, where Cacique was waiting for them, shifting from foot to foot, which made Din feel a little better about his nerves.
Good to see that someone else is just as on edge as I am, he thought wryly, hopping out of the speeder after waiting for it to cut out and slump to the sands again. I am not cut out to be a bodyguard.
Din could watch and wait for a long time. Bounty hunting was often a test of patience.
But there's waiting for a bounty to walk out of a cantina, and there's waiting out in the open to get shot at or blown up, Din thought.
He cast a quick look over the exterior of the palace, searching for anything that Cacique may have missed. A sniper's nest on one of the tower roofs, the blinking light of a small explosive, even the particular flat shine of a probe droid's photoreceptors. And waited until Boba and Fennec left the speeder before following them inside. Once they were through the door, Fennec fell in beside Din and knocked her elbow against his. She tugged her helmet off and shook out her hair.
"Tense, are we?" she asked lightly.
Din switched off the internal comm and turned his auditory sensors up. The whine of feedback made him wince. Din scowled at her.
"Not at all," he said flatly.
She couldn't see his face, but Din didn't doubt that she could hear the scowl in his voice. Fennec chuckled.
"You'll get used to it," she said. "Boba's hands-on."
"He could be less hands-on while somebody's trying to kill him," Din muttered.
"He can hear you," Boba muttered back.
Din scowled at him, too.
Fennec clapped a hand against Din's shoulder.
You'll get used to it, she repeated. It's probably going to keep happening.
Din groaned.
I was afraid you'd say that.
She grinned. Her grin was mostly kind, the affectionate expression that Dan had gotten used to seeing on Fennec's face. But it had teeth, too.
You signed up for this, she reminded him.
Din could see what she was thinking in her eyes.
You were warned, he saw her say. You were told the risks, but you decided to stay anyway.
It wasn't reproach that he saw in Fennec's eyes, not exactly, but it was close. Din squared his shoulders.
Yeah, he said, falling in as they made their way back to the throne room. I did.
Despite Din's apprehension, the next 2 weeks passed peacefully enough. So peacefully, in fact, that after another few days and 3 more trips to Mos Eisley without violence, Fennec calmed down and gave Boba the all-clear to start holding court again, which Boba resumed like he'd never stopped. He was the only one of the 3 of them, of the entire outfit, really, who was able to slip back into the normal pattern without tension. The rest of the palace guards and most of the palace visitors stayed twitchy and alert. Fennec took to prowling around the edges of the throne room, and Din returned to his post by the stairs. Boba ran the throne room with his usual dangerous languor, sprawled in his seat like none of the chaos of the previous days had even touched him.
It doesn't look much like it has, Din thought, 2 weeks into the reestablishment of the palace's normal routine.
Boba had painted his armor. He'd even let Din watch this time, situated on his knees by the edge of the work table while Boba had worked. Boba had taken a polishing cloth and Beskar oil, buffed all of the most recently acquired scrapes and scratches out of his armor, then he'd pulled the cans of armor paint out from underneath his bed and layered on a thick, even coat of matte green, while Din had watched, transfixed. The result was impressive. Boba looked untouchable. He looked calm and in control, and like nothing short of an orbital bombardment would knock him off his throne. If there were spies in the room, beings who were reporting back to Gorga or any of Boba's other enemies, they certainly wouldn't be able to say that 2 attacks back-to-back had rattled Boba at all. Din pressed his shoulders back into the wall and settled in for the morning. He'd been keeping an eye on the rest of the room, trying to figure out if any of Boba's guests or guards were overly suspicious, but Din didn't have much of a head for whisper work. Things should be more straightforward, Din thought irritably. They were 2 standard weeks past the attack on Ushib in the desert, but no closer to digging up any traitors or spies. Din didn't understand why Gorga the Hutt felt like he had to play at a shadow campaign against Boba. Everyone, even Gorga's lackeys, Din suspected, would prefer it if Gorga just came right out and attacked the palace. Din still wasn't sure that Boba had the numbers to fend off a dedicated attack, but so far Din hadn't been very impressed with Gorga's hirelings.
Maybe Fennec's right, Din thought.
The 3 of them, Din and Fennec and Boba, had had several talks about what Gorga might be planning over the last several days. Fennec was still convinced that Gorga was a ways off from being able to fund a full assault. He was still, she said, having trouble hiring competent mercs. If all Gorga can afford is the scug at the bottom of the hole, no wonder he hasn't attacked again. If all of the halfway decent mercs were already contracted out on New Republic Clank, pushing back against the remnants, it was no wonder Gorga had hired a bunch of idiots who couldn't hit a Mandalorian with a concussion grenade or hadn't bothered to check a Tusken for weapons, even though that Tusken had been Ushib.
But if all he can afford is Skug, how's he getting good information out of the palace?
Din sighed, resisting the urge to push his helmet up and pinch the bridge of his nose. They were nearly done with the evening session of Boba's court. He just had to make it another half hour or so, and then he could join Boba upstairs for a meal. They'd done that nearly every night since the mass on Arcanus. They'd eaten, and Boba'd read, and Din had taken to opening the holocron up, gliding through the motions of the Jedi lightsaber forms without the weight of his armor on. After, they'd been splitting their nights, half together and half apart. Din was starting to get so used to the warmth of Boba's body at night that he missed it when he was alone in his own bed.
I don't have the head for whisper work, Din thought, shaking himself to clear his thoughts.
Fennec did, though. She'd spent the last 2 weeks combing through all of Boba's people methodically, hunting for anyone who might have loyalties outside of the palace. So far, she hadn't found anyone.
So Gorga can't afford good mercs, Din thought, but he can afford good spies. His head hurt. Still, despite the enduring problem of a spy in the palace, the last few weeks had been good. Boba had gotten his business up and running again. The latest reports out of Mos Pelgo, Wayfar, and the other outposts Boba had set up were all positive. Patrols had picked up in the sands. It's all going well, Din thought. The last few weeks had been good for Din, too. Boba, true to his word, hadn't thrown Din out of his rooms entirely, or even at all. They'd fallen into their pattern, a night with each other, a night apart, and Din had spent the interim thinking, puzzling things out, trying to come up with rules that he could bring into his arrangement with Boba. He was having a hard time coming up with any. The only rule Din could really think of was, "Don't call me the Mandalore," but Boba had stopped that as soon as he'd realized that it upset Din. Outside of that, Din didn't really know what he was supposed to say, what other people brought into arrangements like this. Din would still prefer that the wider galaxy be kept in the dark about what he got up to in Boba's rooms, but that was all he could think of. "I'm sure Boba will have some ideas," Din thought wryly. Din would even get to hear them soon. 2 weeks had come and gone. Boba had never set an exact date and time for their renegotiation, as Din had taken to calling it in his head, but they had reached 2 weeks. Din expected, Din hoped, that Boba'd want to talk soon. All of Din's bruises had healed. His back wasn't smooth, not with all of its scars still collected there, but it was unhurt. Din wanted more bruises. The rest of Din's life had slowed down and evened out, too. Now that things had settled into a more normal pattern, some of his ever-present tension had faded away. Paz was recovering. Din hadn't seen him. Boba had expressly confined the other Mandalorians to that empty wing of the palace, and all of the adults were following the order. But Ushib was happy enough to fill Din in when he dropped by in the mornings, especially if Din helped her prepare the day's meals. Paz's fever had stretched out another 5 days, but had finally broken last week. He wasn't up to walking yet. Ushib didn't have a Bacta tank to dunk him into, but she'd apparently wrapped him in so much Bacta that the effect was more or less the same. Most of the infection had cleared out, though Paz was, she said, still weak. Too weak to move, though Din had finally gotten off his shebs and flown out to Mos Pelgo a few days ago to wring another favor out of Cobb Vanth. The man had, once again, refused Din's offer to pay him. "Kin of yours is kin of mine," Vanth had said cheerfully, slapping Din across the back. Din had slipped a pouch of credits to Dearman, Mos Pelgo's oldest resident, anyway. Dearman hadn't had any Vanth's particular morals. He'd taken the clink without protest. Once Paz was strong enough, Boba was going to fly the other Mandalorians to Mos Pelgo himself. They'd be safe there until Paz was back up to fighting strength, and then from there they could go wherever they wanted. Somewhere safe, he thought. Somewhere those kids can grow up. The three adult Mandalorians had all been following Boba's orders to stay inside the empty wing of the palace. The three foundlings had not. So far, their explorations had been mostly harmless. Ushib had cleared all of them over a week ago. Din was honestly surprised that he'd caught them out of the empty wing at all. He'd thought that the Verdika at least would keep a closer eye on the kids. None of the foundlings had caught on to the fact that Din knew they'd been sneaking around, either. They were pretty clever, Paz's kids. Kieran was the ringleader, Myrta the lookout, and Took the technician. That boy could slice through just about any door or keypad in front of him. But they were still just kids, and Din had spent the better part of the last year keeping a magical toddler from electrocuting himself or wandering into the mouth of giant spider creatures. Three normal foundlings just didn't quite measure up. Their exploration was harmless, though. They hadn't gotten up to any real trouble, only poked their heads into old rooms or swiped Hanshun from the kitchens, and none of them seemed to think to ask why a bowl of warm Hanshun had been ready and waiting for them the last 4 nights they'd slipped out from underneath Strill and Jag's watch. I'll have to tell Strill eventually, Din thought. She was currently the only one of the others who was still talking to Din. Jag hadn't charged Din outright the first time he'd seen Din after the truth had come out, but he'd balled his big hands into fists and turned his face away. She should probably know that her kids are wandering around as they please.
It was good for foundlings to get out from underneath their teachers every once in a while, though. Especially when they were in a place where others would watch out for them. Din had told Boba and Fennec both. Boba, because Boba had the same instinct for looking after foundlings as Din did, no matter how much he tried to deny it. And Fennec, because Din didn't want her to shoot the kids accidentally. Fennec, almost like she could sense the direction of Din's thoughts, caught Din's eye from across the room and changed the direction of her pacing, making for him instead of the throne. Din waited for her, shifting his weight to take the pressure off his knees. He'd been standing for a while.
"All good, Jaren?" she asked, once she was close enough to hear.
Din nodded. "All quiet over here," he reported.
"Good," said Fennec, rolling her shoulders.
She flashed Din a tired smile. She was working more than Din was. She rarely seemed to sleep at all.
"Quiet on my end, too. Boba's wrapping things up."
"I can see that." The court had started to empty out already. Boba had resumed hearing complaints and concerns, had picked up settling disputes, solving problems, but he hadn't opened his palace to the same sort of late-night parties, the music and dancing and backroom deals that he'd allowed before Din and Geeta had been attacked. Once he was done with evening court, Boba closed the palace and sent everyone who didn't live there home. Beings were flowing past Din and Fennec, heading out for the night. In another 10 minutes, the throne room would be empty and they could all settle in for the night.
"Boba and I can talk," Din thought, hopefully.
He knew it was probably too much to hope for Boba to bring out one of his floggers, but...
"I can hope," Din thought.
He rolled his shoulders reflexively. The skin between them itched.
"Any news from your eyes and ears?" Din asked, pitching his voice carefully low.
Fennec grimaced and shook her head.
"No," she said. "You?"
While he'd been out talking to Vanth about quartering a pack of Mandalorians, Din had also asked if the Babs had heard anything about Gorga the Hutt or anyone like Gorga making a move. Din shook his head.
"Nothing," he said.
"They've even got agents inside Gorga's operation, but none of them know anything." Fennec blew out a frustrated breath.
"That's strange, right?" Din said. "That nobody's heard anything?"
"It's a little strange," Fennec admitted. I don't know, some of the syndicates run tight ships. Nobody's been able to get anything out of the Crimson Dawn in years, not since Dryden Vos got his."
Din grunted.
He'd heard about that. It had been years and years ago, around the time Din had first been getting established. There'd been some noise about going after Vos's killer, but it had come out that Vos's killer had been killed right after murdering Vos, and the whole incident had faded out of memory.
"But that's not common with the Hutts," Din said.
Fennec shook her head. "No, usually the Hutt operations are leakier than... well..." She shrugged.
"We'll find something eventually," she said. "Someone will talk. It's going to be fine. We just..."
She paused. The throne room had nearly emptied around them. There were only a few other beings left, Nora at the bar smiling at a handsome male Twi'lek, a scruffy human talking with Boba at the foot of his throne. Din froze too. Something, he wasn't sure what it was, but something had him straightening his back, rolling up from his lazy position against the wall. Something made his heart beat faster.
"Fennec," Din said, reaching for her.
He looked across the throne room and caught Boba's eye.
"I think we should..."
And that was when the world caved in. The blast took Din off his feet and knocked him out of his body. He saw a flash out of the corner of his eye, hot and white, and felt the explosion before he heard it. He had less than a second to turn, a fragment of time to act. Din threw his arms around Fennec and spun, turning his back towards the fragment of light. Then he went forward, and he went down. Din cracked into something, the wall, the floor, maybe both at once, and all of the sensors in his helmet went out. Static roared. The white light seared him, then faded to red-edged darkness. His ears rang.
Getting blown up, he thought, miles and miles outside of his body, is not my favorite pastime. But I'm alive, he managed to think, distantly.
And then, not so distantly, as he fought to claw his way back into awareness, seizing control over his body again. Din rolled over and coughed. His ears popped, struggling to equalize the changes in pressure. His visor stabilized and flashed a warning. Something had punctured his kuta, compromising a seal. His cuirass felt too tight across his chest.
Din ignored both the warning and the dim flicker of pain he could feel past the haze of confusion. Trained instinct took over. He kept low, but managed to get his feet underneath himself again, pushing up with his elbows. He wobbled, balance shot, but stayed upright. Step one, he thought. He risked a glance down and saw Fennec on the ground, also stirring feebly. She'd been protected from the worst of the shockwave by Din's Beskar, but they'd both been thrown. It was impossible to tell how far they'd gone through the smoke that had filled the throne room, but they weren't where they'd started. Din shook his head, trying to clear the high whine in his ears away, and planted himself over Fennec, trying to reorient himself. The stairs, he thought. Even with his visor back online, he could hardly see through the thick smoke that had filled the throne room. Din had been standing by the stairs, half turned away, to talk to Fennec. That the explosion hadn't killed Din told him it wasn't a standard frag bomb or anything Imperial grade. The explosion had probably been some kind of flash grenade, maybe coupled with a concussive pulse. A regular concussion grenade at this range would have pulverized Din regardless of his Beskar. Someone looking to scare us, Din thought. The Borea in him had taken over. Battle clarity was edging out Din's confusion and shock. Fennec groaned and pushed herself up to her elbows. Din's blaster was in his hand. He didn't remember drawing it. Doesn't matter. There were shapes moving in the smoke. The court was nearly empty, Din thought. It was just us, the other door guards, and Boba at the throne with his Zeltron. So anyone moving probably shouldn't be here. Din reached through the smoke for the nearest shape, caught the edge of something stiff, and pulled. A Rodian, dressed in dark plastoid armor, came out of the smoke, a blaster in each hand. Din had caught the Rodian by the edge of a pauldron. The Rodian shouted something unintelligible, flecked eyes wide with surprise, and shot Din in the face. Din's Beskar took the bolt just below Din's left eye, diffusing across his cheekbone. The resonance rattled his teeth. Din doubted that one of Boba's guards would pull on Din, so he didn't hesitate. Din used his grip on the Rodian to swing him, with all of Din's strength, into the nearest wall. Plastoid armor was pretty good, but Din was strong. The Rodian cracked against the wall and sagged a little in Din's grip, stunned. When Din followed through with a swift punch to the Rodian's jaw, the Rodian went limp and Din let him drop to the ground. He kicked the Rodian's blaster away and swung back towards Fennec, who'd managed to get up to her knees. Din reached down and helped her climb to her feet. She wasn't in much better shape than Din himself. Din's Beskar had taken the force of the blast for both of them, but there was dust in Fennec's hair and blood running down her face. She'd hit her head. The thin skin of one temple split open, but at least her eyes were clear. Her face was ashen. "You're alive," Din told her, voice pitched to rise above the chaos. Now that the dust was settling, other noises were punching through the ringing in Din's ears. Shouts, screams, the high whine of burning carbon. Fennec stared at him for a split second, clearly disoriented, and then her instinct, the same instincts that Din had, ground into his blood and his bones over 100 fights, 1,000, took over. Her expression cleared, fury shone in her eyes. "Find Boba," Fennec shouted back. Din nodded. "You go left," Fennec told him. She drew a blaster and a vibroknife. "I'll go right. Meet at the throne." Din nodded again and peeled off. He was distantly worried about her. Fennec was in her usual getup, a mix of leather and Katarn-grade armor, but she'd taken her helmet off as the court had broken up. She was more vulnerable than Din was. "She's fast," he told himself, "and she's been doing this longer than I have. She'll be all right." And if she wasn't... No, she'll be fine. There was nothing Din could do about it now except kill any enemy he came across, so no one could hurt Fennec or Boba or Nura or any of Boba's people still inside the throne room. Fennec will do the same. Din set his worry aside and waded into the smoke. More shapes were stirring. Din switched over to thermal imaging to cut through the gloom. There were 15 or 20 bodies on the floor, too many to quickly count. Most were stirring feebly, a leg twitching, a head turning, but a few weren't moving at all. Din focused his attention on the smears of orange and red that were upright. He lashed out with a vambraced fist, caught a tall figure at the temple, raised his blaster, and took a hulking shape, either a Deveronian, Din thought, or the largest human man Din had ever seen, between what Din hoped was the being's eyes. The screams of pain and shrieks of burning carbon got louder. White-hot bolts of plasma hurtled through the smoke. Operating on infrared got Din through half of the throne room, though he ran into a table or two and nearly broke his neck, tripping over a throne chair. He stayed close to the wall, lashing out at anything that moved. There were hostiles here. Din took another handful of blaster bolts in various places, his armor ringing and rattling every time it was struck. Din took down two more before the smoke cleared enough for him to switch back to standard vision. He checked behind him to make sure that he'd been hitting at strangers, not Boba's guards. He had brought down a green-skinned Everonian, two humans, one male Twi'lek, and the Rodian he'd hit first. I don't recognize any of them, Din thought. He knew most of the palace's guards by now. Satisfied, he swung his attention around to the rest of the throne room. What Din saw made his vision go gray at the edges, rage pounding his throat. The smoke had mostly cleared, and Boba's throne room was in chaos. Chairs and tables were overturned and broken. Bodies were everywhere. And so, Din thought grimly, raising his blaster, our enemies. He couldn't count how many enemies were in the room, not without losing precious seconds. But the few of Boba's guards who were still up and fighting were fighting two and three and four each. Boba himself, in front of the throne, a blaster in each hand, was fending off at least six. Fennec, across the room, had four. Anger buzzed in Din's mouth. Cowards, Din thought, and charged into the fight. He shot three more. Two Duras who had joined the knot of enemies around Boba, one IG series droid that was trying to drag Nora out from behind the bar by one of her Leku, before someone in the room realized that Din was up and fighting, and screamed, "Get the Mandalorian!" Three beings in the same sort of rough black plastoid armor as the Rodian Din had punched rushed Din altogether. They charged him so fast Din only had time to fire twice, one shot going wild and the other grazing an attacker's side before they were on him. A big red Deveronian hit him first. Din had enough time to brace himself, shifting his weight so that when the Deveronian crashed into him, Din wasn't bowled over, but the impact still shoved him back and threw his balance off. The next handful of seconds was a frantic struggle to stay upright, pushing back against the Deveronian. Din lost the struggle when the other two attackers, a stringy human woman with a hooked scar on her face and another Rodian, this one blue, caught up with their Deveronian friend and slammed into Din. He went down, armor sparking as it struck the sandstone floor. Din lost his grip on his blaster, and it went skidding away. A vibroblade hummed. Operating on blind instinct, Din closed his left hand into a fist and swung a vicious backhand at the nearest face. He caught the Rodian in the side of the head and felt something crunch. Green blood sprayed. The Rodian reeled away. The woman's got the vibroblade, Din thought, struggling in the Deveronian's grip. The Deveronian was trying to pin him, to hold him still so the woman could shove the vibroblade underneath his armor. Not gonna happen. Din had gotten a lot of practice with grappling lately, and the Deveronian wasn't as good as Boba. Din kicked out, hard. The Deveronian shouted and buckled as his knee went sideways. He knocked into the woman, throwing off her aim. Instead of finding Din's kuta, which would give to a vibroblade, the woman's knife skated across Din's cuirass in a scream of burning carbon. The Deveronian rallied, wrapping a big hand around Din's throat. Din's kuta was stiff on purpose. The dense fabric was designed to hold up to a lot of abuse. Beskar was better, but a Mandalorian couldn't be armored head to foot in Beskar and still have enough mobility to get a job done. The kuta was supposed to strike a balance between protection and mobility. That balance saved Din's life. The Deveronian squeezed, an awful, terrible pressure. Nothing at all like the way Boba had wrapped his hand around Din's throat. But Din's kuta kept him from crushing Din's throat flat out. The kuta wasn't strong enough to stop the Deveronian entirely. The big man dug in, face twisting in a snarl. Pain burst behind Din's eyes. The edges of his vision began to gray out. Din got a hand on the Deveronian, scrabbling for purchase, trying to get at the softer, more vulnerable skin between the Deveronian's forefinger and thumb, to do something, anything to break the Deveronian's grip. But Din was using his right hand. His wrist screamed. He just wasn't strong enough. Blindly, his vision going gray and then black and then red, lungs burning, Din got his left hand between his body and the Deveronian's, and he reached for the only weapon he could currently get to. The Darksaber came to life with a snarling hum. The Deveronian was not wearing Beskar. The blade went through him at an awkward angle, the stink of melting plastoid immediately and overwhelmingly strong, and cut through the Deveronian's ribs like they were made out of repair putty. The Deveronian's grip slackened. He might have cried out, but Din couldn't hear him. Din's ears were full of static and heat. His entire world had compressed down to the hand around his throat. But that had slackened more, the Deveronian's grip failing, and then finally fell away. Din heaved in one, two, three desperate breaths. His vision returned, shot through with gray spots, and he was able to see the Deveronian. The man's face was slack, too. His eyes were wide. The long blade of the Darksaber had gone in crooked at the edge of the Deveronian's ribs and had come out on the other side of the Deveronian's spine. The Deveronian was dead. Din coughed and rolled, depositing the body, then forced himself up to his knees. He'd only killed one enemy. He'd been rushed by three. The Rodian had fallen, an ugly gash on the side of his head, but he was still moving. The human woman was moving, too. She still had the vibro-knife in her hand. Din was past thought. Time had flown and stretched. Adrenaline burned in his throat. He'd practiced with a Darksaber. It wasn't as familiar in his hand as a spear or a stave or even a blaster, but it was familiar enough. Din had practiced with it. He'd killed with it. He pushed himself up to his feet and brought the Darksaber down in a clean stroke, thinking of the holocron, of Anakin Skywalker in shades of crackling blue sweeping down an overhand stroke, and then the woman wasn't holding a vibro-knife anymore. She screamed, pulling the smoking stump where her hand had been a heartbeat before towards her chest. Din's next blow stopped her screaming. The body, now in three pieces, fell smoking to the floor as Din turned to face the Rodian, who had managed to get back up to his feet. The Rodian pressed a hand to his head. His hand came away wet and green. He shook his head, antennae twitching, and raised his blaster. That was all the invitation that Din needed. Din lunged and brought the Darksaber down in a decisive horizontal slash.
Some Jedi Knights say that Shicho is only a form for younglings because its forms are so basic, said Ahsoka Tano between Din's ears.
He'd watched her and the other Jedi go through their forms in the holocron so many times he could probably recite the damn thing from memory.
Those knights would be wrong, Din thought, following his downstroke up with a forward thrust, detached from the rest of his body. The basics can save your life.
The Rodian was dead before he could think about firing his blaster. His body fell and Din staggered a little. He'd put too much force behind his blow and his momentum carried him forward. His ears were still ringing and his eyes were still flashing with spots. Din shook his head and took a sliver of a second to get his feet under him. He took another deep breath, even as his battered throat protested.
I'm alive, Din told his body, and I'm going to stay that way. But I have to get all of these carking people out of here.
He spared another second to see if Boba was still fighting and nearly went down with relief. Boba was still upright, and he'd thinned his crowd of attackers down to just two, though he'd lost his blaster at some point and was now clearing room around him with his Gaderfi. Fennec was still up, too. She hadn't lost her blaster, and she wasn't missing with it either. Anyone who came near her fell with a bolt of plasma between their eyes.
I can't worry about her. Din had to get to Boba. He had to. Fury and fear burned in his mouth. Gorga had come here. Gorga had attacked Boba's people. He'd attacked Boba. He won't win, Din thought viciously. Not while I'm alive.
The thought was clarifying. Din held onto it, sliding easily into the elevated battle state that had been drilled into him since he'd been plucked off a battlefield by a Mandalorian warrior. It was easy to fight with the Darksaber. Din hadn't ever really fought with it before, not like this. The brief bout on Arcanus had been over and finished in less than 30 seconds. This was something else. Din didn't bother trying to deflect any blaster bolts, trusting his armor to hold up. He went through the throne room quickly, the Darksaber sang in his hand.
Din! Boba roared, his voice rising over the pitched sound of the fighting. Din, behind you!
I know how to do this, Din thought, and switched his grip, plunging the Darksaber's crackling plasma blade behind him. Someone screamed. Something sizzled.
the battle surged. Within a minute that stretched out for what felt like years, Din had killed his way to Boba's side. He'd left a trail of bodies smoking behind him, moving in the patterns he remembered from the holocron. Dooku's dangerous grace, Ahsoka Tano's steady strikes, Skywalker's relentless forward momentum. By the time Din reached him, Boba had killed his last two attackers. His armor was scored by carbon, smoking in a few places. The neat paint job he'd finished just a few days ago was already a mess of chips and scrapes. But he was alive, and he reached out, gripped Din's forearm tightly, and pulled Din to his side. "We've got to get Fennec," Boba shouted. The fight was still raging all around them. All the smoke had cleared now, and at least a dozen beings in black armor had spilled down the stairs. But they weren't fighting alone, either. The noise had drawn in the rest of Boba's guards. There was more black armor in the chaos. Darker armor. Beskar. "The Verdikae are here," Din shouted back, old instinct screaming at him to go to his tribe. Mandalorians protected other Mandalorians. Strill and Jaeg were hardly more than children. "We can't..." "Fennec first," Boba said, already turning towards where Din had last seen Fennec. "Then the kids. They've got Besk, she doesn't. She..." Though it tore at his heart, Din nodded and followed Boba. Boba was right. Fennec didn't have Beskar. She was more vulnerable than Strill or Jaeg. Din hadn't gotten a good enough look to see which of the siblings had come to help, but they both had a full set of Beskar Gam. Boba's right, Din thought, clutching the darksaber tightly. It crackled in his hand. "He's right. They'll be okay. But Fennec..." Din and Boba waded into the fighting again, side by side. Din thought distantly that he could probably draw his spear and clear some space, but the darksaber had a clearing effect of its own. Everyone who saw it knew instinctively that it was dangerous. Hulking Deveronians and tough whipcord humans went leaping out of its way. Out of the corner of his eye, Din saw a few of the attackers break and run for the stairs, their courage failing. "Good," he thought, parrying a human man's wild right hook, the darksaber taking off the man's arm at the elbow. "Good. Just leave. Break and run. Get out of here." Boba had abandoned his blaster entirely. His Gaderfi cleared away those brave enough to face Din's darksaber, and together he and Din cut a bloody and burning swath towards Fennec, who'd taken a hit. Her face was bleeding from three or four cuts now when she'd lost her pulse rifle and her DC-17 both, was fighting with a pair of vibro-knives flashing in her hands. Despite the blood on her face, she was wickedly fast. She'd brought her enemies down to just three. A Pawan woman was fighting Fennec knife to knife, while a human and a Gamorrean tried to slip through openings in Fennec's defense. Din whistled sharply and brought the darksaber crashing down in another Skywalker's crashing overhead strikes. Boba took on the Gamorrean. The human threw up his hands to defend himself, but the darksaber didn't even stutter as it cut through first the man's hands, then his chest. Boba made similarly short work of the Gamorrean. His Gaderfi whirled. The Pawan screamed in rage, throwing herself wildly at Fennec, and Fennec ducked gracefully, a vibro-knife flashing. And then it was over, the Pawan's body falling to join the rest. Fennec lifted her head up to catch Boba's eyes, then Din's. "All right," she panted. "All right," Boba said roughly. "You?" Fennec shrugged. "I've been worse." "Good," said Boba. "Then let's get these Futune out of my palace." Din and Fennec nodded, and they all three turned again to face the throne room. There wasn't much fighting left. Most of the other palace guards had poured in, picking up what Boba and Din and Fennec had started. Din saw Kasik tear a KX series security droid limb from limb. He saw flashing black armor and watched as Jaeg charged a pair of humans like an angry bladeback and brought them both crashing to the ground. Nura, never as defenseless as she looked, had come up over the bar with an enormous blaster in each hand. The handsome Twi'lek she'd been talking to before the flash grenade had gone off was lying motionless on the flagstones. Din operated entirely on instinct. He took up a spot just off Boba's flank, guarding his side, and together they cut through the few attackers who still remained. The battle was over within another spare handful of minutes. Din was breathing hard. His chest hurt faintly, and he ignored it. There was still a warning flickering across his visor. He ignored that, too. When the last attacker had been killed, a Twi'lek with pale pink skin and geometric tattoos down the sides of his leku, who caught one of Fennec's vibro-knives to the throat, Din stood at Boba's side, panting, and surveyed the damage. The flash grenade that the enemy had tossed into the room at the start of all of this had packed some kind of concussive charge. Chairs and tables lay broken all around where it had gone off, and the floor was badly scorched. The walls were blistered with carbon now. One of the taps at Nora's bar had broken and was spilling Tatooine Junko freely. Boba's throne had lost one arm, and the room was full of bodies. But Din was alive. Boba and Fennec, too. Nora, Jaig, Kasik. Jaig didn't even look hurt. His armor was free of the carbon scores that marred Din and Boba's Beskar.
"Is everyone all right?"
Boba asked, his voice still pitched at battlefield volume. It echoed in the now quiet space. Too loud. Several people winced. Boba cleared his throat, dropped his voice.
"Is everyone all right?" he repeated. "Nora?"
"I'm fine, boss," Nora said. She had a rapidly darkening bruise on one cheek, and her eyes were huge, but that was the worst of it Din could see.
"Kasik?"
Kasik rumbled in the affirmative.
"Zero?"
"Aye, boss."
"Theron?"
"Fine."
"Shand?"
Din swung his attention around to Fennec. She was still bleeding everywhere, but she looked more irritated by it than anything. None of the cuts on her face looked particularly deep. Din reached for his belt anyway, fishing for a back-to-patch. He still had the darksaber activated, the blade hissing and crackling, and he deactivated it with fingers that suddenly felt stiff and slow.
"I'm fine," said Fennec, though she did take one of the back-to-patches Din offered her.
"Jaren?"
"Fine," said Din automatically. He'd find the puncture in his kuta later. Boba eyed him, but nodded.
"Jaig?" he asked.
Jaig stood still and quiet for a minute. He'd hit Gorga's mercs like a forge hammer.
I'm okay," Jaig said. He looked at Din, then back at Boba.
"Good," said Boba. "We're not done yet. We'll need to do a room-by-room sweep. Make sure none of these Shabuere are still here. Kasik, Theron, I want you to go through the north wing. A2-0, take the east. Jaig, go back to your people. Shand, Jaren, we'll need to comb the front of the hall and the lower floors."
Whatever Boba had to say was lost as something struck the outside of the palace with enough force to rattle the ceiling. The whole room shook. Nora let out a scream of fright, Fennec a black curse, and Din was almost thrown to his feet before Boba caught his elbow. There was another deep boom, and the ceiling rattled again.
"Great," Din thought, grabbing Boba for balance. "They are going to try an orbital bombardment. This isn't really how I wanted to die."
He braced himself for a third hit, wondering dimly what kind of ordnance Gorga the Hutt had access to, but the ceiling didn't rattle again. Instead, a third, even deeper boom thrummed, the sound loud even through Din's crackling auditory sensors. And that boom was followed by the unmistakable sound of a very loud, very fiery secondary explosion. A fourth boom, just as deep and full as the third had been, sounded and echoed through the palace. There was another explosion, followed by a screaming crash, and then everything fell quiet. Everyone in the throne room waited, breath caught in their throats. But there were no more booms or explosions or crashes. Din and Boba looked at each other.
"I'll check the front," Din said.
"Not alone, you won't," Boba growled. "Shand, check the landing pad. Make sure no one's bombed the ships. Kasik with her. Jaig?" But Jaig had shaken off whatever daze he'd been in. He looked at Din, visor blank, and then he said, "The kids," and took off at a run down the hall towards the wing he and the others had been staying in. Boba swore. "Nora, go with him," he instructed. "Make sure his kids are all right. Theron, get to Ushib. She'll be down in the kitchens. Me and Jaren are going to see what all that noise was. No one else leaves the palace, understood?" There was a chorus of,
"Yes, boss,"
and then everyone leapt to do as they'd been told. Din stared after Jaig for a minute, torn. If Jaig was worried about the foundlings, Din couldn't help but be worried too, but shook it off. "Big explosions first," Din thought, "then the kids." He and Boba took the stairs up towards the front of the palace as quickly as they could manage. Din could feel a faint pain now, growing stronger. It flickered in his side. He ignored it as best he could and skidded to a stop in front of the doors. Gorga's people hadn't bothered to sneak in this time. They'd killed the front door guards. There were bodies here, too. The door guards had fought back, and it looked like some of the mercs that had been injured in the throne room had fled up here and had died. Beyond the doors, in the sands, the source of the explosions was apparent. Two ships lay in several smoking pieces, wings and noses and guns strewed across the sands. One, an Omicron-class attack shuttle, had been blasted neatly in two, sliced apart by some kind of precision ordnance Din couldn't even think of. Half of it lay in front of the palace doors, and the other half lay in the sand. The other ship could have been anything. Din saw long wings, some kind of fin, but it hadn't broken neatly, not like the Omicron. The other ship lay in dozens of pieces, most of them smoldering. Din stepped cautiously out of the shelter of the palace and looked up.
"Boba," Din said. His mouth was dry.
"What happened?" Boba asked, edging out of the palace too. He was looking at the destroyed ships, not at the sky. "You and Fennec invest in anti-ship artillery while I wasn't looking? I've got some air defenses, but..."
"Boba," Din repeated, still looking at the sky.
Boba stopped talking and looked up too.
"Oh," said Boba, voice blank with surprise.
"I thought..."
"Din," he said, tearing his eyes away.
"I thought you were kidding."
The source of the deeper, more thunderous booms, the source of the ship's destruction, was apparent, too. There, hanging in the sky over Tatooine, its belly painted a new, garish blue and white, was the unmistakable shape of Moff Gideon's light cruiser.